This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, February 16th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Adi Agnihotri Madholkar.
The 6th Annual Arkansas Association for Play Therapy Conference will be held on March 2nd and 3rd at Mount Sequoia's Bailey Auditorium in Fayetteville. Dr. Rick Gaskell will present on the neurobiology of play therapy, and presentations will be made on Jungian child-centered sand play and family therapy techniques. Early registration ends this Saturday, the 18th. More information is available at arplaytherapy.org.
Later on Ozarks, a new exhibit of photographs on the University of Arkansas campus celebrates African-American women, including women from the surrounding area. Plus, Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com talks to Kyle about the Arkansas River, home prices in Northwest Arkansas, and the possibility of Benton County voters having a chance to make the county wet.
We begin, however, with the latest on the efforts to keep the flying Razorbacks in the Fort Smith region. Proposed cuts in the federal defense budget recommend that the 188th Fighter Wing lose the A-10 Warthogs, replacing that current mission with an unmanned aircraft mission. Since late last year, a community-based group has been working to keep the mission in Fort Smith. The latest endeavor to sway the decision on the future of the mission is a web-based letter-writing campaign. The website, SaveTheFlyingRazorbacks.com, is operated by the 188th Fighter Wing Fort Chaffee Community Council. Yesterday, I reached Tracy Winchell, communications manager for the city of Fort Smith. She says concern about possible cuts developed last fall, but the idea for the web page and a letter-writing campaign began just weeks ago.
And then in the middle of January, we get this letter from this pilot's wife, and it was respectful, it was passionate, and it was informed. And we looked at each other and went, wow, that's what we do, because there are so many people in this community who are very passionate about the 188th and know the work that they do. And so we started working on the concept for a website so that people could write their own letters rather than submit form letters. We thought that would mean a lot. It's a real basic website, and it talks about what's happening, what the Air Force is proposing, why it's bad for our nation, and why it's bad for our region. And it's got a lot of factual information that most of us as civilians can understand, and it gives people the opportunity to sort of fulfill that template, that example that the pilot's wife set for us. It is passionate, it is informed, it is informative, and it asks a series of questions about how this decision was made. I think as much as anything, people are frustrated, including our senators, that this decision seemed to have been made behind closed doors without a lot of explanation coming forth at this point.
You mentioned that as of the time you and I speak, which is mid-afternoon Wednesday, more than 650 letters. Is there a goal of a number of letters you'd like to have?
We'd like to have 1,000, and we're well on our way to that. We originally set our date as this coming Friday or early into next week, thinking that the senators might be ready to ask for a meeting with Secretary Panetta. And in our conference call this morning, every week the community council's steering committee for this project has a conference call with the Senate staff and the congressional delegation staff from across the state. And we get an update on what they're doing, and then we update them from our end, and we work the problem from there. And when the letter-writing campaign came up this morning, they said there's really nothing on our calendar that causes us to need to trigger that. So we decided to extend the deadline into next week. We're thinking the following Monday, which will be, I think, the 27th. So, yeah, we'd like to get 1,000, and I think if we extend it into that, we can get well over 1,000, especially if our friends from Northwest Arkansas keep helping us.
Is there any sort of example that you can use to say this can be successful, or any idea how much it can help?
Oh, I think a lot. In 2005, when we went through the base realignment and closure process, there was a website set up for all communities potentially affected by BRAC to have public comment. And this was on a federal page, and it was open for everyone to see. And we were astounded at how many regular Air Force units and Air Guard units, how many of those community members said, get those planes out of here, get those people out of here. We don't want them in our community. And we take for granted the amazing support that all of our branches of the armed services, active duty and guard and reserve units, receive. And so when Chairman Principe came for his site visit in early July of 2005, we had probably 200 or 300 people holding their signs and expressing a very positive support for the 188th. And he commented later about that publicly and privately to our congressional delegation that he was very moved at how many people cared about this unit. And he pointed out that that community support plays a huge role in any military installation's ability to carry out its mission, and it's a very, very important part of recruiting.
You mentioned the BRAC situation, and I'm sure no one at the time was happy to be going through that. Do you think there is a benefit now that BRAC did happen?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, there's some discussion, of course, on Secretary Panetta's part, that perhaps there would be a 2013 round of BRAC and maybe even a 2015 round of BRAC. What's really interesting with that is he didn't include money in the 2013 fiscal year budget for a BRAC round. And in the Senate Armed Services Committee hearings yesterday, most of the members of that panel said, you really expect us to have a BRAC 2013 round in a political year? Really, Secretary Panetta? But on the flip side of that, a base realignment and closure round is an open process, and it is a transparent process. There are some defined parameters. There are some attributes and some measurements that you must meet. And we were able to explain to this 9-member civilian panel, many of them were retired military, wait a minute, these scores that the BRAC team and the Department of Defense have us down for were incorrect. If we really compare what we have at the 188th, these are the numbers that you would get, and we convinced them of that. And in this particular case, for fiscal year beginning 2013, we don't understand what the parameters were. And last week when the Senate staff, or the senators and the congressional staff met with the Air Force Chief of Staff, they asked a series of questions about what parameters were used. And I think in their public comments, they were very clear in stating that they didn't understand the criteria that were used. So a BRAC process would give us, around the country, all Air Guard units, the opportunity to see what those parameters were in a very public forum and then make our case. And then we think that because we've got such amazing attributes, airspace and range and low cost of doing business and our ability to do joint forces training with ground troops all over the country and provide excellent close air support training, we're going to come out on top. So in some circles, we would welcome the BRAC process.
Is there any sense, do you get a sense that there's any sort of guarded optimism or any sort of overwhelming sense in the city right now about the 188th and its fate?
I think we're all very grateful for the opportunity for a potential new mission. I don't think any of us at this point thinks that the unit is in danger of closing, and that's where we were in November. We were very concerned about whether or not there would be a mission at all. The proposal on the table has us getting an unmanned mission, but the planes won't be on the ramp here. Now, that's very concerning given the opportunity that infantry people have to train here for close air support like I was talking about. So we're comfortable, fairly so, as comfortable as you can be with Washington politics, that when all is said and done, we will have a presence at Fort Smith. What we're really hopeful for now is that that Congress is going to take a look at the entire Air National Guard package, and I think General Wofford said as much yesterday in the Air Force Times. It's really important that we understand why those decisions were made. And, yeah, we're pretty optimistic that if the decisions are based on military value and economical value, that we're going to come out on top. But we've got a long way to go before we get there, and between now and the time we're expecting a decision, it could be months. We've got a unit deploying. Right now they are at Davis-Monthan going through a spin-up exercise so that they can go into combat. And so we have to keep remembering that while we're working very hard to protect the jobs of these unit members, that their primary goal is to be focused on the mission, and we're going to support them on that all the way through.
Tracy Winchell is the communications manager for the city of Fort Smith. She talked to us yesterday afternoon about the website SaveTheFlyingRazorbacks.com. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. It's Thursday, so it must be time for Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com. How are you, sir?
I am well this morning.
You've had a bit of everything to cover on the City Wire this week as well.
Correct. It's ranges from slackwater harbors to sex.
He's not lying, folks. Okay, well, let's start with those at the top. The slackwater harbor, this deals with the Arkansas River, of course.
It's something that's they've been working on for quite some time. When I say they, regional officials, and especially with this Regional Intermodal Transportation Authority. And this has impact on Northwest Arkansas as well in terms of transferring commodities, sand, gravel, and you know other bulk commodities to Northwest Arkansas. The Slackwater Harbor is different, and it would be built $15 million. I should back up. The Corps of Engineers has said, okay, we will approve a $15 million Slackwater Harbor project on this portion. That doesn't mean they're paying for it. I mean, the money will have to be found. But it would create a port facility that's off the river. I mean, it's obviously it's on the river, but it's tucked away. It's safer, provides more functionality. You can get rail to it, whereas a port that's on the river channel, you know, it's you get a barge loose in that arena and It can go anywhere. In a slack water harbor, it's just going to sit there. So it'd be a great project. It could tie. It's going to be close to the I-49 route. Could have the plan is to have rail into that area. So officials are hoping that at some point that will be a true intermodal facility.
All right, take me to Garrison Avenue and a business called Pleasures by Casey.
Pleasures by Casey, you know. It's a adult. Let's see, it's adult novelties, but it's not the pornographic. It's not like X-Mart. It's more an aggressive lingerie type
there
store.
You go. Right.
And I've been in the one here to check it out because when they say it wasn't pornographic, I'm you know everybody's first impression is well, how do you sell these type of products and it's not pornographic? Well. A lot of it, the books and the videos, is stuff that you're going to read and hear on Oprah or Dr. Oz or Dr. Phil about improving
your sex life.
The sex life, you know, between consenting adults in the bedroom and all that good stuff.
Right.
But anyway, she wanted this. Casey and Richard wanted to open a facility in downtown Fort Smith. Well, you would have thought that. They were trying to reopen Miss Laura's.
and for the uninitiated, Miss Laura's, of course, was a popular board. Dello,
right.
Back in the day, yes.
Well, and there is much irony in this, Kyle. I mean, Garrison Avenue began as a devil-may-care bars, saloons, gambling halls, whorehouses. I mean, and now we're uptight when somebody wants to sell adult products. So it's and this store is right next to a bar.
Does this or does this not fall under the sexually oriented business that the Fort Smith City Ordinance has?
No, it doesn't, and okay. That's what I think. That's more to the point. Thanks for bringing me around to the point. There are folks who say, "How could this not be a sexually oriented business?" But according to the city law, city ordinance, It's not. Casey said she's had quite a bit of grief trying to get in. It's taken her a lot longer. The Central Business Improvement District, the Jane Hughes, who works for that organization, they've had some disagreements over allowing them to open the facility, but they're going to open the store. City Administrator Ray Gossick, to his credit, he encouraged city staff. He said, just, you know, look, it doesn't matter what you think. You have to follow the ordinance. And the ordinance is they're not a sexually oriented business. So it looks like they'll open.
Some interesting housing news out of Northwest Arkansas. In January, the median home price in Northwest Arkansas up more than 20%.
I think you reported on it's a huge jump. It's a welcome jump, obviously, for that real estate market. But several months back, you know, Walmart announced that, hey, these retail folks that we moved to New York a couple of years ago, we're going to move that division back. We're going to repopulate that here in Bentonville. Well, those folks coming back obviously need homes, and they've been buying quite a bit. Now, the home sales, here's what's interesting. In January, the home sales in Benton and Washington County, there were 319 homes sold, down just a little bit from the 334 in January 2011. But the volume, the total volume, was 51.3 million this January compared to 48.9 million last year. So the people who've analyzed the numbers say that the likely cause of this increase in the volume in terms of sales and the median home price is the higher paid Walmart folks coming back and snatching up those homes in the higher markets.
Speaking of Benton County, there is an effort to get on a ballot for the first time since the mid-1940s, to have the county go wet.
Right. This is a heck of a show, Kyle. If we could just talk about rock and roll, we would have sex, drugs, and rock and roll all in one show. Yes, you know, since 1944, I think a few things, correct me if I'm wrong, Kyle, but I think a few things have changed since 1944 in Benton County.
Well, a few people have moved in. There have been a couple of businesses formed, yes.
Right. So, you know, and this is Walton family money. Want to liberalize the alcohol law there in Benton County to make retail sales possible. And if anyone's ever reviewed or looked at Arkansas's liquor laws, you will probably throw whatever you're reviewing down within 5 minutes because it makes no sense. But here we go. We're going to have to get 38% of the folks who voted in the last election to sign a petition to get this on the ballot. I think I've talked to a lot of people. They think it's going to go through, that there's been enough. There are enough new people obviously who work for Walmart who are not from Arkansas, who are from regions and states where a wet, dry county doesn't make sense.
You know, but the last couple of efforts haven't even gotten to the ballot. They haven't even had enough signatures.
Well, and this time, I don't know about the last one, so I'm speaking somewhat from a position of ignorance, but this group has hired a professional signature gatherer.
That's a difference.
And we will see how that works. This firm has been successful. They handled the campaign in Boone County in 2010 that was successful in Boone County.
And if you've grown up in Arkansas, it still seems somewhat short of amazing that Boone County went wet.
Well, yes, I'm glad you said that. I wasn't sure I was going to say it, but I mean, if I was in Benton County and I wanted the county to be wet, I would be hanging some high hopes on the fact that Boone County moved, because that's much more conservative, both from a social standpoint, a religious standpoint, and a political standpoint, than Benton County. So that's where, if I was betting, I would bet that it would get on the ballot and it would pass.
Back to the Fort Smith Convention Center. We haven't talked about it for a few weeks. but there are some caterers that were on the list to work with the Convention Center have been culled from that list?
Yes, sir. The Convention Center is now being managed, it has for several months, by the Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau. And you know, there's a lot of bluster about the Convention Center not being run like a business during the prepared food tax debate, and obviously that tax was voted down. Well, Claude Legree and other staffers with the Convention and Visitors Bureau have reviewed numbers, and one of the things they looked at was that some of the caterers, they charged them a 10% catering fee to use the facility. They were delinquent. I mean, some hadn't paid for events up that were in May. Hmm. So they gave them 60 days, sent out a couple letters, gave them more than enough time. I mean, they gave them more time than, you know, AT&T would give you and I if we were late on a bill. But They call the list. The interesting part, Kyle, is that one person on the list was Eddie York, and he led. He essentially was one of the leaders of the charge to defeat the 1% prepared food tax. Now, some people might think that's a political payback, but Eddie was the first one to say, "Nope, I screwed up. You know, I just forgot to pay it." And he's told me he sent the check in, so he'll be back on the list. But it was a talker story here in the Fort Smith area.
Gosh, Michael, that's a lot to cover. We didn't get the rock and roll. Maybe next time.
Okay.
All right. Michael Tilley is with the CityWire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire KUAF region.
Earth, sky.
More than half of the species of life newly discovered by science are insects. That's according to the annual State of Observed Species, the SOS report, released in January of 2012.
The report by the International Institute for Species Exploration says that in 2009, the most recent calendar year of compilation, scientists discovered more than 19,000 previously unidentified plants and animals.
That's about twice as many species as were known in the lifetime of Carolus Linnaeus, the Swedish botanist who initiated the modern system of plant and animal names and classifications.
Some highlights of the SOS report: after insects, the largest group in the 2009 numbers were plants. The report listed more than 1,000 new arachnids, that is, spiders and mites. Only 7 new species were birds. Most of the 41 new mammals in the inventory were bats or rodents.
More new living species were discovered in 2009 than in the year before. But there's a lot more new life out there left to find, these scientists say. Their guess is that there are 10 million additional living species that await discovery.
For more about the diversity of life on our planet, visit the biodiversity page at earthsky.org. EarthSky is a clear voice for science. We're at earthsky.org.
It's Thursday, February 16th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellams.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Madhulkar.
With us, Becca Bacon-Martin. She is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I wish you could see the stuff that happens before we go on the air.
It's
these
not that
people
exciting.
Are crazy.
It's
They're
not
really
that
crazy.
Interesting.
Yes, it really is. Interesting, however, is who's performing at the Walton Arts Center tonight.
Yes.
She's
a legend.
A real, true use of the word legend, Loretta Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
At the Walton Arts Center. You know, she was supposed to be here in the fall.
Had knee surgery.
She's back on the road. She'll be here at 7 o'clock tonight. If you have tickets for the September date, they will be honored. If you need to buy tickets, they start at $49 at 443-5600.
Don't come home with drinking with loving on your mind. That's one of my favorites she does.
Okay.
The Pill, Fist City.
Coal Miner's Daughter.
Coal Miner's Daughter.
Also tonight.
I'm going. I don't know if you could tell.
I could tell that you were kind of excited.
Yes.
And you know Glenn Campbell's coming.
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. Indeed.
And they say that this is probably his final tour.
Yes. He's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So. And he said, I want to do a final tour. So
that's an opportunity you don't want to miss. That will also be at the Walton Arts Center.
That's in April.
Tonight, there's a happy hour at Speakeasy.
Mm-hmm.
Doors open at 7. The guest is Mark Brennan Rosenberg, who is author of Eating My Feelings and Blackouts and Breakdowns. He's apparently a very famous, and I'm sorry I don't know this, lesbian, gay, bi author.
So LGBT.
He will be here at 7 o'clock tonight. And there's a Gen Art event called After the Love at 7 o'clock at Crystal Bridges in Bentonville.
Gen, G-E-N.
Yes.
Gen Art.
This is art for younger patrons.
Okay.
Do they have a – what's their cutoff line there for younger, I'm wondering?
It's not us, Kyle.
Okay.
Face facts here.
Diplomatically put.
Would I be
– Oh, I'm sure you would.
Get out of here. Of course you would, yes.
You can't even wave at 30 yet.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you would be.
All right.
Find out more at crystalbridges.org.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. This is Ozarks at Large, and I'm Iti Agnihotri Mutholkar. Artist Jerry Talaferro is a former military man who left Special Forces to become a full-time photographer. His exhibit called Women of a New Tribe celebrates the spiritual and physical beauty of African-American women. On display at Mullins Library on the University of Arkansas campus, the exhibition seeks to honor both Black History Month and Women's History Month. The exhibition also features images of African-American women from our own community, including University of Arkansas students, nurses, a doctor, clergywomen, and a community activist. Earlier this week, I spoke with Talaferro, a Charlotte, North Carolina native, on the phone about his art and ideas that inspire him. He began the conversation by telling me more about the exhibition.
Well, Women of a New Tribe is an exhibition that looks at the physical and spiritual beauty of the Black woman or Black American woman. We use a style of photography that's kind of reminiscent of the photography they used in 1930s and 40s Hollywood, a kind of a real stylized black and white photography. The reason we like to use black and white photography is because it's less distracting. You know, the subject is pretty much the most important thing, and all of a sudden the lighting and composition seems to be a little more evident, or, you know, the viewer can have a more uncluttered view to the picture or the subject.
Now, your two other exhibitions have focused on airplanes. The first one was a fun exhibition called Paper Flight Fantasies, and the second one was called The Test, about the Tuskegee Airmen, who were the first Black aviators in the U.S. military.
Right.
And now you have Women of a New Tribe up at Mullins Library at the University of Arkansas.
Right.
So how do you choose the topics that you want to cover? Do you just come across them, or do you actively seek them out?
Well, you know, I love history, and I love, you know, stories and well-told stories. And so, you know, if it interests me and I feel like doing it and I feel like pursuing it, you know, I just kind of, you know, get consumed by it, you know.
What about this exhibition? How did you come up with the idea for this exhibit?
Well, this exhibit kind of developed itself. When I was in Memphis, when I lived in Memphis, and I did a lot of commercial photography, and a lot of my clients were companies that did ethnic hair and skin care products. So we had a lot of models that came through the studio. So a lot of times on the weekends, we would get together and shoot just for, you know, everybody's portfolio. So we were looking for ideas, you know, things, striking pictures, things that would get attention, you know, good portfolio photographs. And we started playing with African masks. And before long, we had, you know, a fairly good series of photographs that kind of went along with that theme. So we had the chance to show those photographs in an exhibition called Heartbeats for Africa. It was a charity auction, I think, was sponsored by Morgan Freeman and doctors in Memphis to support medical missions to Africa. Well, somebody came in and bought all of the pictures, so we kind of figured that we were onto something. And so we, you know, started concentrating on, you know, putting those pictures in an exhibitable form or adding to that collection the pictures. So that kind of brought us to that, you know, Women of a New Tribe thing.
Why do you think it's so important that this exploration of African-American beauty be discussed through photographs?
Well, you know, initially we did it because we thought it looked good. But, you know, after the exhibit was on the road, you know, for a couple of years, you know, we get a lot of good comments from women, particularly young Black women who, you know, didn't know how to feel about the way they look, their hair, their skin. So all of a sudden they saw these pictures, and we would get these comments about how good they felt, you know, about themselves or how all of a sudden they start seeing themselves in a new light. And I felt, you know, I felt that's the real value of this exhibition. It causes people to take another look. It causes people to, you know, examine their definition of what's beautiful and what's not, or, you know, what's attractive, you know, and even to broaden their definitions of what a beautiful woman is or what a beautiful person is.
What are some of the best comments that you've gotten about the exhibition? Any stories that you remember?
Well, there is a kind of a funny story. The exhibit about a year ago was in Bucharest. The U.S. Embassy had brought the exhibit there. And I got an email from this woman who said she just happened, it was two black women who happened to be just traveling through Europe. And they saw the advertising for the exhibit. And they went there. And they were the only two black women there at this exhibit that was, you know, fairly well attended. And I think people thought that they were a part of the exhibition. And they were telling how people were coming up to them and talking and just were fascinated with them. And how good they felt about the attention they were receiving. So like I said, she sent an email and you know, just praising the exhibit. And, you know, I thought that was, you know, a really nice thing to happen.
Now, you prefer a style of photography where you can work on achieving a specific look or a background or, you know, just a complete effect. Why that preference?
Occasionally we will, you know, go outside or shoot, you know, shoot at a place that's important to the woman. So, you know, it depends. You know, it depends on what the woman tells us. We often ask the woman to bring a prop with them, something that's important that they can hold, that communicates who they are. One of the things we like to tell the women is that we give them a situation. We say, 100 years from now, if somebody found these pictures and there's no caption or no names or no explanation of the picture, they would look into the picture, look at the woman, and say, I know this woman, or I know something about this woman. So, you know, we love the picture to communicate who that person is and what they do or what's important to them. You know, to give you an example, we did a picture of a lady a couple of years back. She was a community activist, and I don't know how she got this, but she was able to get a community watch sign, you know, and bring it with her, you know, still on the post. So, you know, that's the kind of picture. You know, we want to take a picture more than a pretty picture. We want to take a picture that communicates something to the viewer.
So you do want to leave the interpretation part to the audience.
Right. That's an important part of it. It's kind of like an exercise for you to look at that picture and to use your imagination or to try to know something about that person, you know, by the picture.
But a lot of these pictures also seek to shape your perception in some way. There are pictures of a pregnant woman. There are pictures of a woman holding a spear.
Yes. You know, it's the pictures are meant to inspire, you know, certain things. Some of the pictures are kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, fantasy. You know, there's a picture of a woman with a lion's head on her shoulder, and that picture is, you know, just it was shot that way because we were building a picture around an African saying that the daughters of lions are lions too. So, you know, a lot of times we will try to build a picture that communicates a certain, you know, a certain theme or a certain saying or occasionally, you know, it just, you know, we get a good idea for a picture, you know, and we try to shoot it.
That's interesting. What do you want people to take away from this exhibition after they leave the exhibition? What kind of questions do you want them to ask themselves or ask people around them?
Well, the big thing we want, you know, if you broaden your definition of what a beautiful woman is, I guess the one thing I believe is that when you look at a picture, you see with more than your eyes. You also see with your heart, you know. So we kind of, I guess if a person left the exhibition and all of a sudden the person saw a black woman walking, just the everyday black woman walking down the street, if he would look at her a little differently, I think we've accomplished our goal.
Thank you so much, Jerry, for talking to us.
I enjoyed it.
Photographer Jerry Talaferro's exhibition, Women of a New Tribe, which celebrates the spiritual and physical beauty of African-American women, is on display at Mullins Library on the University of Arkansas campus through the end of April. I spoke with him earlier this week.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Madhokar.
With us is Jody Beznoska, Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hello.
Hello.
How's everyone today?
Good.
Pretty good. I've discovered that I can see Loretta Lynn after all.
Yes, you can. You can. We've found your tickets. If
yes.
if not physically, at least metaphorically.
And Loretta Lynn will be in the building tonight.
She will be in the building. It was, as many people know, she was ill for a while. She had some surgery on one of her knees, I believe. And she's here. She's performing. And we've got a sold-out house. So if you missed your chance and you didn't get your tickets to Loretta Lynn, your best bet is to come down to the box office at 6 o'clock. The show starts at 7. Come down at 6 o'clock and get on our standby list. That does not guarantee you a seat, but it gets you to the front of the queue in case something opens up. Okay. She's a legend, and we've been wanting to have her on our stage for a long, long time. It's going to be a really exciting and sort of iconic evening. And I guess speaking of iconic and speaking of the Grammy Awards and all sorts of lifetime achievement happening, Glenn Campbell is going to be with us in April, and the tickets for his show went on sale this morning. So if you want to come see this show, it's part of his quote-unquote goodbye tour. You really should get your tickets soon because I think these are going to go really fast. I think it will be, you know, sold out well in advance.
And he, of course, was on the Grammys.
He was on the Grammys. He received, I believe it was a Lifetime Achievement Award. And it's really, you know, they're billing this as his final tour, and we just couldn't be happier that he's going to be on the tour with us. I think it's really going to be a special night. And that's April, but it goes on sale this morning. So, Tigers Be Still with Theater Squared is continuing this weekend. I believe there's a show tonight, Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And then there are two more weekends following that. The show closes, I think, on the 4th of March. That sounds right to me.
Yeah. The first Sunday in March.
Yeah. Really, really top-notch show. I don't know. Have either of you seen it yet?
No, I have to.
It is really fun. I finally got to see it. And it's I don't quite know what I was expecting, but it far exceeded whatever I might have been expecting. It's a small cast. There's only 4 people. The set is fantastic. It really uses that small space really well. But I think the best thing is the performances are just terrific. They are funny and heart-wrenching in some ways. And even though the situation that they're describing in the play is a little bit weird, it feels real, it feels normal. So I highly recommend it. I would say it's not really for kids. It's definitely a show meant for adults.
Okay.
But it's really fun and really well done. So that's Tigers Be Still for Theater Squared, running for this weekend and 2 more weekends after that. Then on Tuesday of next week, the 21st, we will finally kick off a week of Million Dollar Quartet. It was just in Memphis, actually, and it got a rave review down there. I think it was at the Orpheum. This is the show that is based on that one night in the studio when Elvis, Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, and Jerry Lee Lewis all were called together, and they had sort of an impromptu jam session. There's a recording of that night and a photo, but nobody really knows what happened. You know, why were they there? What did they talk about? What did they work on?
Of course, 3 of the 4 have now passed,
yeah.
right? Carl Perkins died a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if anyone's asked Jerry Lee Lewis what happened there.
I don't know.
Because he's the last remaining.
I don't know. We are so excited about this show, if you can't tell. And so that runs from the 21st of February through the 26th. It's a full week. There are tickets available for all shows. So if anyone tells you it's sold out, don't believe them. There are tickets. You can get tickets. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. Just a word of advice. It's a 90-minute show with no intermission. So those of you who have tickets, you might want to arrive on time because you really don't want to miss any moment of it. So that's next week. Then on the 28th of February, which is a Tuesday, we will have Dao, the Art of the Drum. Mm-hmm. If you want to come to this, you should get your tickets now. And the bonus to this is that this show is on the 10x10 art series, mm-hmm. so the single tickets are only $10 a piece. There will be a creative conversation prior to the show at 6:30. That's free, open to anybody with a ticket. I believe that will be in Star Theater. So that's Tuesday, the 28th of February, a 7:30 show. Then Friday the 2nd, we will have Tia Fuller, the final show in our Starlight Jazz Club series for the year. She will perform at 7 and 9 o'clock. So this is in the Star Theater, very small, intimate space. Great place to hear jazz. And she's a real – she's great. She's a saxophonist. She used to be in Beyoncé's band. She's now got her own career. So that's Friday the 2nd at 7 and 9. On Saturday the 3rd at 8 o'clock, this is a new little show that we've just added. It's actually not even on sale yet. It'll go on sale tomorrow. But for anyone out there who knows who Seth Radetzky is, Seth will be here and he will be doing a little cabaret style show. He calls it My Big Fat Broadway Show. It'll be in Star Theater, so it'll be small. Seth is the host of a SiriusXM Broadway daytime radio show, and he is a major Broadway insider. He's played piano for probably every Broadway show. He knows everybody, and he has created this show where he basically deconstructs great Broadway moments. And so he will lead you through, you know, how Patti LuPone breaks down a song. Mm. And he's fast and funny, and he's got all this inside material. So if you're a Broadway fan, this will be a good one for you to come see. Again, that's going to be the 3rd of March. That's a Saturday. It's at 8 p.m., and the tickets for that will go on sale tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay. And then on the 5th and 6th of March, I can't believe we're talking about March, that's a Monday and Tuesday. We'll have some University of Arkansas music programs in those nights. Then on the 8th and the 9th, that's the Thursday and Friday of March, we'll have the Broadway show In the Heights.
Tony winner.
Multi-Tony winner.
Right.
4 Tony Awards, actually. So that's going to be very fun. That's on the 8th and the 9th of March. That's a Thursday and a Friday. And then on the 10th of March, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, SONA, will have its 4th concert of the season, I believe. Could be 4th, could be 3rd. I think it's 4th.
4th, yeah.
Yep. And this one, I can't wait for this one. This is the SONA plus the Fayetteville Jazz Collective.
Oh.
And I just learned, I've been wondering all year how they were going to actually do this. Were they going to merge the two bands? Was the symphony going to play for one half and the Jazz Collective play for the other? Well, what I learned yesterday was that they're going to be on stage together and they're basically going to toss music back and forth. Mm. So they're going to play classical standards and jazz standards, and they're going to experiment with them, and the musical experience is sort of going to be constant, and you're going to have both these bands up there at the same time. I'm pretty excited
this
for this one.
This is exciting, actually.
This one is March 10th. And that's a 7:30 show. And there will be a creative conversation with Paul Haas, the music director, prior to that.
That's right.
Yeah. Will you be involved in that?
Yes.
And so Kyle will be involved
yes.
in that. Always fun. And then just a quick peek ahead to the 14th of March, which is a Wednesday. The Peking Acrobats will be here. We had them here last year, and the snow decided they weren't going to do their show. So they're back. And then on the 15th of March, also in the 10x10 art series, we will have a performance by the SF Jazz Collective. And these guys will be doing a tribute, but they'll be exploring the music of Stevie Wonder. But I think that's about as far as we'll go.
Okay.
We don't want to push too hard. We don't want to get rid of February too soon, right?
It's the Ides of March, right? March
yes,
15th?
That's
yeah.
right. The Ides okay. of March. So busy schedule, and you can get all of this information at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600, or you can come down and visit us at the box office. We do have a new exhibition up in our gallery. Mm-hmm. It's called Made in the USA, and it's by Jeannie Hewlin, who is the chair of the art department at the University of Arkansas.
All right. Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Jody.
Jody Biznoska is the Vice President of Communication at Walton Arts Center.
Time now to give some things away.
Mm-hmm.
We got a good package for you today.
We do. We have two tickets to Malco Theaters.
Any Malco movie theater in the area.
And also two tickets to the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra performance.
Saturday night at 7:30 at Arendt Arts Center in Bentonville. It's the Trail of Tears concert, including Copeland's Appalachian Spring. Now, we will mail you the movie passes and the tickets to the Arkansas Philharmonic Performance Orchestra Saturday night at 7:30 will be at will call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What is the question?
Well, you told me that it was on this day in 1923 that King Tut's tomb was opened.
That is correct.
Which, of course, I don't know if you know, but that discovery led to a craze about Egyptology all across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to the movie The Mummy in 1932.
Okay. Oh, I was thinking more of the
Mummy. No.
Sorry.
That's okay. 1932 version.
Okay.
And it is about, it starts in 1921 with the opening of the tomb of Imhotep, fictional mummy. But it was clearly going off the popularity of the King Tut craze.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, who played the mummy? His real name, William Henry Pratt, born in London, England. If you know much about horror movies of the 1930s, it should be down to a couple of three names. So who played the mummy in 1932?
You can call up with your answers at 1-800-522-5823.
1-800-522-KUAF.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 16th of February, 2012. It was on this day, 1978, the first public dial-up computerized bulletin board system, or CBBS, went online in Chicago. In 1978, the internet was in its infancy, not available even to most computer users, but with the CBBS, members could dial in using a telephone modem and post notes to each other. It was the beginning of social networking. It's the birthday of the novelist Richard Ford, born Jackson, Mississippi, 1944, author of The Sports Writer, Independence Day, The Lay of the Land, a trilogy, three novels published about 10 years apart. He grew up across the street from the house where the novelist Eudora Welty had grown up. Richard Ford, who said, "For a writing life to flourish, your mind has to go outwards." It's the birthday of Henry Adams, born Boston, 1838, whose memoir, The Education of Henry Adams, came out the year he died in 1918. He was the great-grandson of John Adams, the grandson of John Quincy Adams, went to Harvard, traveled around Europe, journalist, later taught medieval history, also wrote two novels, a number of biographies, and The History of the United States of America, 1801 to 1817, in nine volumes, a neglected masterpiece. Henry Adams felt that his education had failed to help him come to terms with a changing world, and that was the thrust of his memoir, which did not mention his wife, Clover, who he was in love with and who committed suicide 13 years after their marriage. Here's a poem for today by Jack Riddle, entitled Bus Driver. Standing at the back door, waiting while the bus's engine hums against the dark cold, its exhaust, a flume chilling into ice, melting the snow beneath it. Driver, hands in pockets, draws on his cigarette, exhales, and feels the mean language of age move in his bones. Behind him, in the loser's locker room, he knows his boys are dressing slowly, staring into mirrors, settling their wet hair straight, frowning at the way they have to look, trying to think of anything but the silent ride home. The snow, packed hard now in midwinter, squeaks underfoot, and the air freezes in the lungs, burns like a tongue stuck to a frozen lamppost. Driver glances at the bus, Wilson Public Schools in black letters along its side. Then up into the sky, clouds crossing the full moon's light like angels trying to comfort anyone against a loss. The players come out, pass him, step up into the bus, find their seats. Coach gets on last, sits in front. Driver takes a last draw, feels the smoke mix in his lungs, exhales, drops the butt, a quiet hiss into the ice, gets on, and pulls the warm bus out across the empty lot, down a block, left onto the highway home. Bus Driver, a poem by Jack Riddle from his collection Losing Season, published by Cavan Carey Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time to answer our question.
What is the answer?
The question again was, who played the mummy in the 1932 Universal horror classic, The Mummy? I said his real name, William Henry Pratt. He was born in London, England. Boris Karloff, who of course first gained fame playing the Frankenstein monster. His career went for decades. And you would probably best know him, perhaps, as the narrator of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. So
it all makes sense now.
Okay, it doesn't. But we'll pick a correct winning name out of the ceramic cow in just a moment.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Goshen. Your listener-supported service from the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas.
The 35th Annual Hogeye Marathon will be held on Sunday, April 15th, starting at 7:30 a.m. in Fayetteville. This event will include a full and a half marathon, a 5K run, a four-person relay, a kids marathon, and more. Information including registration and volunteer forms are available on the web at hogeyemarathon.com. Perhaps we should have an Ozarks at Large four-person relay team.
We should.
Okay.
But we might
probably
not.
Right. We'll have some of the KUAF folks will be in the Mardi Gras parade.
We will. We are trying to do this float, Mardi Gras float. I know that it might not be one of the best floats out there.
But you know what? In the spirit of Mardi Gras,
we're trying.
You participate.
And we'll have fun.
Yes.
A lot of fun.
You guys will. I won't be there. I'll be at.
That's kind of sad.
I know.
But it'll be fun for you.
Yes,
though.
I'll be at Baum Stadium, get to do play by play for the Razorbacks, second game of the year, playing Villanova, this first series.
And Guy loves baseball.
I do indeed. I also love Mardi Gras.
But
the Fayetteville Mardi Gras parade is Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're
it
all
starts at 2:30 p.m.
Right.
So.
Right. Very good. Let's see. Antoinette Grajeda and I here tomorrow for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Christina Thomas will join me Sunday for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
That is correct.
You and I will be back together a week from today.
Uh-huh.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
And it was on this date that the King Tut tomb was opened back in 1923.
It was.
And you wanted to point out something that's happening Saturday that we can't talk
February
about.
February 18th. Copernicus was born.
All right. So we don't have a Saturday show, so we wouldn't be able to mention that.
So just to let you know.
Thanks, Ithi.